Welcome to episode 12 of the Fredcast. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to the first Daylight Savings Time episode version of the Fredcast. It's been a long, dark winter, and finally, we can go riding at night again and get out of our basements. Got a lot of news for you tonight. In addition to the news, tips for some cold weather cycling that came from my experience at the Solvang Century, a review of a new water bottle that I think you're going to be interested in, a preview of the upcoming Sea Otter Classic, and some upcoming great urban bike rides. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Okay, well, I told you last week that the Tour of Flanders was coming up. Well, last weekend was the 90th annual Tour of Flanders, and as you'll remember from last week's show, there was a lot of speculation going on into this year's race about whether or not last year's winner and world champion Tom Bonin could win the race a second year in a row. Well, apparently, there's some kind of a curse or a jinx against a repeat. Eric Lehman was the last person to successfully defend the Tour of Flanders when he three-peated in 1973. And the last time a world champion won the race was Eddie Merckx when he won it back in 1975. Well, despite the curses, jinxes, hoaxes, hexes, and all the other bad things, Bonin did actually win the race this year. And he won it just by a nose over fellow Belgian and Discovery Team rider Leif Hoste, who took second place just 1 second behind him. And the third place went to Discovery's George Hincapie, who was 1 minute and 14 seconds behind Bonin. Now, at the end of the race, Bonin was quoted as saying, "I've said all week I was the favorite to win here. I haven't been hiding that fact." So he was pretty sure that he was going to win. Now, apparently, this was a pretty treacherous race for many of the riders, with about 20 kilometers of cobbles and almost 20 short but extremely steep climbs. And when on those climbs, when they get clogged with riders and with spectators, bad things can happen. So, in fact, a lot of the riders on those climbs, a lot of the times you could see the pro riders dismounting and actually pushing their bikes up the hills. Now, the race started with some 200 or so riders in the peloton, but crashes and a brutal pace took many of them out of the race very, very early. When there was about 40 kilometers to go in the race, a 14-man break took off, and on the summit of a hill called the Valkenburg, Hoste and Bonin took off from the break and opened up a lead. And over the next 30 or so kilometers, Bonin and Hoste increased the lead to over a minute, and they kept that lead all the way to the end. At the finish, it was an exciting sprint finish. Hoste tried to out-sprint Bonin, and then Bonin ended up taking the race in just the last 150 or so yards. So if you got a chance to watch it, it was really, really exciting. And we're looking for a lot more next week, which I'll tell you about in a minute. But first, at the end of the Tour of Flanders, the Pro Tour standings have had a change. Tom Bonin is now number one with 89 points. Alessandro Bayan from Italy is number two with 75 points. And Floyd Landis from the U.S. is now in third place with 52 points. To round out the top five, Thomas Dekker from the Netherlands, 51 points. And Filippo Pozzato of Italy is in fifth with 50 points. And George Hincapie, who, as I said, took third in the Tour of Flanders this week, is in seventh place with 45 points. Now, with the Tour of Flanders now in the history books and any talk of curses squelched, the big question this week is whether or not Bonin is going to do double by winning this weekend's Paris-Roubaix, also, as you'll recall, called the Hell of the North. Now, only time's going to tell, of course, but don't worry, I'll be back here next week, same time, remember that, to give you all the details. Now, meanwhile, an interesting story is coming out of Belgium this week in the run-up to the Hell of the North this weekend, and it concerns a farmer who was plowing his fields, and his fields are directly adjacent to the course where Paris-Roubaix takes place. The farmer's tractor hit on what looked like an old piece of rusting junk in his field, but upon further inspection, it turned out that this was a racing bike from before World War II, and they're figuring that it must have been discarded by a racer at some point in the 20s or 30s when they were racing Paris-Roubaix. Believe it or not, there was still a water bottle attached behind the bike's saddle. Now, scientists are still testing the bike to learn more, but in their tests of the water bottle, they found traces not only of water, but also of cognac and another aperitif. And right now, they're speculating that the rider was probably drinking the alcohol to get a stimulant or maybe even an analgesic effect. So there you have it. Even way back when, they were doping. Now, here's a story I think that you're all going to be happy to hear about. This one comes out of Belgium, and it's dated April 1st, but I don't think it's an April Fool's joke. Basically, Reuters is reporting that the UCI and the organizers of the Grand Tours seem to have come to some sort of an agreement ending the dispute that they've had ongoing for the last 18 months or so. Basically, they had a number of secret meetings. And this was, if you remember, a couple Fredcasts ago, I told you that the Pro Tour team sponsors got together and put a lot of pressure on the UCI as well as on the Grand Tours. And as a result of that meeting and that pressure, it looks like something's been hammered out. Pro Tour Commission President Vittorio Adorni is quoted as saying, quote, "The UCI can announce that an outline agreement has been reached between all the parties involved. There is still a lot of work to be done. But the important thing is there is an agreement of some kind." Now, what it looks like is the proposal is going right to the dispute that the Grand Tours had with the Pro Tour. Specifically, the reports are that come 2009, the Pro Tour teams are going to be reduced from 20, which is the number of Pro Tour teams now, down to 18. And then that's going to give these organizers of the Grand Tours more chance to make discretionary invitations for their races. That would basically mean that then they'd have the ability to invite four teams that weren't Pro Tour squads to their races. So let's hope this isn't an April Fool's joke, and let's hope that come the next Fredcast, we'll actually have a real agreement in place, and this feud will be over once and for all. So speaking of the Grand Tours, everybody has been talking a lot this year about how Jan Ulrich seems to be the favorite, or at least one of the favorites for this year's Tour de France. And we're all looking for Jan to start his racing season as soon as possible. And we know that he's decided to skip a lot of these one-day classics that we've been talking about. Well, he had originally planned on doing a race on April the 4th. It's a circuit race, the Circuit de la Sarthe in France. It turns out, according to Team Mobile's team doctors, he is not going to be doing that race because apparently Jan has irritated an old injury to his right knee. According to Ulrich, quote, "I was really looking forward to competitive racing, and from now on I will pay more attention to ensure the irritation is fully healed. Then I can progressively increase the training load." He further went on to say, "When the knee is better, I will start to prepare for the tour with my usual discipline." Now, meanwhile, Jan went on TV to do a TV interview about the same time that they made this announcement. It was a pretty good PR move. And in his interview, he said, quote, "I'm optimistic. I'm very motivated to arrive at the tour in top form." He then went on to say, and this is the interesting part, quote, "If I do not feel any more pain, I will maybe take part in the Tour of Italy." And I think that word choice is important because we've heard that Ulrich was definitely going to take part in this year's Giro. And to hear him say that he will maybe take part in the Giro, personally, it leads me to wonder whether or not this injury is a little bit more serious than he is and his team doctors are making it out to be. And even if it isn't, think about the fact that you've got guys like Basso and guys like Floyd Landis and Vinokourov who are out there racing, who are training nonstop, and most importantly, who are boosting their own personal confidence levels. Take a look at a guy like Floyd. He's won two major events already this year. He's at the top of the points for the Pro Tour, or at least in the top three. And you've got to think that his confidence level is way up there. Hincapie's the same way. So Ulrich's not racing. These guys are racing. Ulrich is injured. At this point, personally, I'm questioning how injured he is and whether or not he actually will be able to come back and do the Giro and whether or not he'll be able to suffer through the tour. On the other hand, you've got all these other guys who are at the top of their form, top of their game, increasing their confidence level. It really leads you to wonder what's going on with Jan Ulrich, what's going on with T-Mobile, and what's going to happen come July when the racing starts in France. Now, moving away from road cycling for a moment, let's talk about mountain biking, and specifically something very Freddy. Let's talk about mountain bike technology. Shimano has actually come out and announced their new 2007 XTR components. This is a big deal. As you know, XTR components are the top of the line when it comes to mountain bike drivetrain brake components. And I've put a link in the show notes to the website where Shimano is talking about their new components. And there's way too much to cover in the news section. And this is something that I'm going to have to cover, hopefully, in a future feature section where I can tell you a lot about the new features in the new XTR. But significantly, and this is a big deal, according to Shimano, the new XTR components are actually going to end up saving a full pound over the old XTR components. Now, they haven't announced every single item in the group. And when you go to the website, you'll see that they have a picture that shows the entire group, and there are significant holes in that picture, things like cranks. And so it remains to be seen how they're going to be saving a pound. But just looking at the design of the new components, they're really cool. It reminded me of the logo from the X-Men, the movie, because every single component has this huge, very cool looking X right in the middle of every component. It looks really, really cool. And I'm going to put a picture actually on the Fredcast website right in the blog page so that you can see what one of these components looks like. So there's some really neat innovations that they've put into the new XTR. Go ahead and go to the Shimano XTR website. And I'll tell you what else I'll do. I will post what I was able to find from the Shimano press release right in the show notes of this week's show so you can take a look at it. They're saying that these new components are going to be available on your store shelves in October of this year. And they're saying that you're going to find a lot of professional riders using these components very, very soon, if not already. And they're saying that at the Sea Otter Classic coming up, which I'm going to talk about in the feature section of today's show, Bart Brenchens from Giant, Adam Craig from Giant, Walker Ferguson from Scott, and Allison Sador from Rocky Mountain. And apparently they're going to be announcing some more riders in the coming weeks. So this is really exciting information for mountain bikers. Personally, I haven't upgraded the components on my mountain bike in a long time, and reading this press release and taking a look at the pictures has me really excited. And this looks like probably my next upgrade for my mountain bike. So I can't wait for October to come to see if I can't get a deal on some of these components and put them on my mountain bike. And you know, if I do, I'm going to tell you about it right here on the Fredcast. So look forward to that. Last week, you'll remember we talked about the Road Nationals and the registration being open for the 2006 USA Cycling National Festival at Seven Springs. Well, it looks like registration was really popular because some of the fields have a maximum field size of 125, and that's for the road races, and 100 for the criteriums, and several of those fields have already been filled. Now, the good news is that they have started a waitlist procedure, and I put a link in the show notes, but for now it's sportsbaseonline.com. The bad news is that the waiting list began at 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Monday, April the 3rd. So by the time you hear this, you're going to be a little bit behind. So you're going to want to go visit that website as quickly as possible in order to get yourself on the waiting list if this is a event that you want to participate in. Now, I do have a slight correction that came from listener Noreen. And Noreen, thank you for sending this to me. She wants you to know that while you have the U.S. Cycling National Festival at Seven Springs, the U.S. National Criterium Championship for elite men and women is actually being held in Downer Grove, Illinois, August 18th through 19th. So, Noreen, thank you for that. Again, if you want to get yourself on the waiting list, go to Sportsbase Online, get yourself signed up, go out there, ride hard, and win. Well, by now you know what that means. It's time for the Lance Armstrong Stories of the Week. And of course, both these stories have to do with doping. A few weeks ago on the Fredcast, I brought you the story of Dr. Mario Zorzoli. Now, he's the doctor who last year gave a French journalist some documents that Lance signed at the 99 Tour that the journalist then used to accuse Armstrong of doping. Now, the UCI suspended Zorzoli, and Zorzoli was a manager of the UCI's medical service. And they suspended him at the end of February after he admitted that he had indeed given the doping control forms, although unwittingly, to the L'Equipe reporter. According to Pat McQuaid, quote, it was a UCI decision to bring him back because we felt it was the right thing to do. We've received a lot of letters from people and institutions involved at various levels who did not want Dr. Zorzoli to become a scapegoat because they know he's valued by the UCI. We've had letters from several cycling teams and riders, including Lance Armstrong, who supported his return. So Zorzoli's back, Lance is okay with it, and apparently all's well that ends well. But that's not the end of the story. The UCI apparently is doing their own investigation and has set up an independent inquiry to investigate the claims that Armstrong doped during the 99 tour. Meanwhile, the director of the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, the director's name is Dick Pound, he's now saying that he's going to watchdog the UCI's investigation. And if WADA decides that the investigation wasn't thorough enough or wasn't fact-based enough or that they didn't dig hard enough, that there's a very good chance that WADA could actually do their own investigation of Armstrong and the 99 Tour de France. So Armstrong may be retired, and there may be new contenders for this year's tour, but the doping allegations continue to surround him. They will not go away, and the investigations are going to continue, I guess, just until somebody finds something. They've investigated and investigated and investigated. They haven't found anything, but there's just people out there who are sure that the only way that Lance could ever have come back from the cancer and the chemotherapy and all that he went through and then win 7 consecutive tours is if he doped. Personally, I don't choose to believe it. I think that it's just a modern-day witch hunt in cycling, but we will see what happens. Yesterday, a group of airline pilots embarked on a cross-country bike ride to raise money for memorials paying tribute to 33 flight crew members and thousands of others that were killed September 11, 2001 in the terrorist attacks. The ride is called Airline Ride Across America, and according to their website, it's an effort, in their words, albeit symbolic, to bring about a public awareness to the airline crews flying on September 11th and the ultimate sacrifice that they made. The riders are going to be riding from Los Angeles all the way to Washington, D.C., Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and New York City. They're going to ride for a total of 33 days, one day in memory of each crew member that was involved in those hijackings on September 11th. And they're going to dedicate each week to one of the fateful flights on that day. I've put a link in the show notes to their website. It's www.airlineride.org. There's a couple of different ways that you can support them, and I've put links in the show notes for each of the ways that you can support them. Their goal is to try to raise $100,000 for each of the memorials to each of the flights. And that's approximately $5 for every mile that they're planning on riding. One way that you can support them is simply by donating, and I put a link in the show notes for that. Another way you can support them is by buying one of their jerseys, which would be really a great thing, because then not only are you supporting them privately, but publicly as well. And how could you not? These people were just doing their jobs, and they were innocent victims of a horrendous plot. Another way you can support them, and one way that I think is really, really cool, is you can ride with them. They're going to do 3 circuit rides on 3 different days, and they're inviting people to come out and ride with them. The first one is this weekend. It's April the 6th. It's in Phoenix, Arizona. The next one is April the 14th in Dallas-Fort Worth, and the last one is April 29th in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where you'll remember United Flight 93 went down when the passengers tried to take the airplane back from the hijackers. So this is a really great cause, a really great event, and I hope that you will, like I'm going to, I hope that you will support them in this very noble and very selfless cause. I got a follow-up to a story that I didn't think I would ever have a follow-up to, and I think you'll be pleased with the result. You'll remember the episode of the Fredcast that I entitled, "This Podcast is Not a Pipe Bomb," and I did that because my quote-unquote quirky story that week was about the Ohio University student who had a sticker on his bike for a punk rock band called This Bike is a Pipe Bomb. And as a result, they destroyed his bike, trying to determine whether or not the bike was or was not actually a pipe bomb. And when I presented that story, I mused about whether or not the university would reimburse the student, Patrick Hanlon, for destroying his bike. University officials have decided that they will be reimbursing Hanlon for the cost of his seven-year-old Cannondale T700. What they haven't decided is exactly how much they're going to be reimbursing him, whether they're going to be reimbursing him for the cost of a new comparable bike, which would be a Cannondale T800, which is about $1,400, or whether they would be reimbursing him for the price of a used T700. Be that as it may, personally, I'm really glad. First, the guy, they blow up his bike, and then they charge him with inducing panic, which they then drop. Now the guy's actually going to get reimbursed for his bike, and he'll be able to have a bike. So I guess in the end, all's well that ends well, and I'm glad to see that they're actually going to be reimbursing him for the damage that they caused to his bike, which was not a pipe bomb. And that's going to do it for the news for this week's edition of the Fredcast. Okay, and before we get to tonight's main feature, I just want to follow up on a couple of things. And the first is, you recall I told you about my experiences at the Solvang Century when it got very cold, very wet, very snowy, very haily, and I quit, and I decided not to finish the ride. Well, I got an email from Susie in Santa Cruz, who also did the Solvang Century, and she told me that she did something different that I'm going to consider in the future, and that I think that the rest of you might want to consider as well. Now, she told me, in her email, she said, "I changed my plan and did the 50 miles that day since there was snow and an overturned car on the highest pass for the century route." That's true. I forgot to tell you about that. And she said, "I have to say that from the waist up, I was warm and dry." She also had one of those plastic rain jackets that doesn't breathe very well. I think I told you that I felt like I was a rolling greenhouse there for a while because I was getting sweaty and humid inside. And until it started to rain and get cold, I felt really toasty, like she did from the waist up. And she said, but from the waist down, she was frozen solid. So I know what she was talking about. She said she couldn't feel her toes or her legs after the hailstorm. But that what she did, and this is the key part of her email to me, what she did was she got those disposable hand warmers that you take when you go skiing. And I put a link in the show notes to a website that she pointed me to. And she said she put one between each shoe and toe cover, and then one on each leg inside her tights. And she said that that really thawed her out and made her warm, and she was able to keep riding comfortably. So there's an idea for you for your winter cycling. Go out and get a couple of these hand warmers, experiment with them, and find the places on your body where you can put them in your shoes or in your tights or in your jersey, where they're going to warm you up just enough that you're going to be able to continue your ride. So Susie, thank you so much for that tip. I really, really appreciate it. Next, I just have to celebrate with you for a moment. I just have to say it again. Daylight saving time is here. And for those of us that ride at night, the extra hour is a godsend because we are now able to do more training than we were able to do in the wintertime when it was dark very early at night. And personally, I do ride at night. I do my training at night. But as I've talked about a couple of times, riding at night is just that much more dangerous. It's dangerous enough for us out there with the drivers and for their lack of courtesy for cyclists, or at least their lack of knowledge what to do around cyclists. It's even worse when it's dark and you're wearing a headlight and you've got that taillight flashing. And, you know, sometimes I think that taillight is a target for drivers. So congratulations to us. We made it through another winter. Daylight saving time is here, and we can really get back to some serious training. Okay, next up, I want to tell you about a new product that I tried that I think is a little bit Freddy and certainly very good for those of you that are out there doing long training rides or endurance rides or even racing. Because one of the things that is critical, and we've talked about this before when you're doing a long ride, is making sure that number one, you stay hydrated, and number two, that you have all the fuel that you need. And one of the ways that I've talked to you about fueling you, fueling your body, is through the use of gels. And if you use gels, you know that number one, they can make a little bit of a mess. Number two, you can end up with a lot of garbage at the end of your ride, a lot of sticky garbage, the gel packages once they're empty. And number three, you got to carry them in various places, whether it's in your saddlebag or in your jersey, and sometimes they're difficult to get to. And so I was looking through a magazine. I came across a product that intrigued me. And the product is called GelBot, G-E-L-B-O-T. And of course, as always, there's links in the show notes. And it looks like a standard water bottle, But in addition to being able to carry your fluids, it also carries your gel. And according to the ad, it had this very innovative top that would allow you to either get gel, get fluid, or get both at the same time. And I'm just going to be honest with you. I was skeptical about this product, but it sounded like a really great thing. So I went and I ordered one. And I got it last week, and I had a chance to ride with it over the weekend. And I have to tell you, I was very pleasantly surprised at how well it worked. And I think this is going to be probably my primary water bottle from now on. So let me tell you the way that it works, the way that you load it, the way that you use it, and how it worked for me. Well, first of all, as you can imagine, it's a standard water bottle. The cap looks essentially like any other water bottle that you've seen. But beneath that cap, there's a reservoir that you can fill with up to 3.2 ounces of gel. Now, the water bottle itself also holds 24 ounces of liquid. So before you go out on your ride, you fill the water bottle like you normally would, and then you take the gel reservoir out of the top, you fill it with your gel, you put it back into the top. There's a little plunger in there that you push a little bit so that you get a little pressure on it. Close the water bottle up, and you go out for your ride. Now, you're riding, and you want to get some liquid. Well, you open up the valve on the top of the cap, just like you would on any other water bottle, and you get water. Close the cap all the way down, and if you suck on the cap, you're going to get gel. If you pull the cap out about halfway and you suck on it, you'll get both liquid and gel, because as you know, when you consume the gel, you should be taking it with liquid as well. And I went out on my ride, and I was expecting that when I got home, I was going to have to wash down my bike, that I was going to be a sticky, gooey mess because I was going to have gel all over the place. And instead, what I found was that I was consuming the gel on a more regular basis, therefore keeping my body more consistently fueled, that I wasn't getting gel all over myself, that I didn't have sticky, gooey trash in my jersey pocket because I had filled the gel container before I left and then threw the gel package away. And the great thing about that is, and somebody recently wrote to me and said that they wanted me to talk more about some environmental issues, how many times have you been out riding on your favorite road where a lot of other roadies are out riding, and you look by the side of the road and there's a Clif Bar package, or there's a couple of gel containers that have been discarded. And so the great thing is, you don't have that trash. You can't even inadvertently lose it because you threw it away at home. So I was very, very impressed with this product. I thought that it worked exactly as advertised. They do have a patent pending on it, so I hope that they get that and that they're able to protect themselves. But this is a product that I would absolutely recommend, and one that I think that you might want to check out. So it's gel-bot.com. I put a link in the show notes. And again, for full disclosure, I bought this product. And so I'm not telling you about it because they gave it to me or I'm beholden to them. This is a product that I believe in and one that I would recommend to you. So go out and check it out. Okay, next up, I just wanted to talk about some upcoming rides that are coming up that you might want to consider, some upcoming cycling events. And the first one, and this is one that you've probably heard of before, but maybe you really didn't know what it was all about, and this is the Sea Otter Classic, and it's taking place this weekend, April 6th through the 9th, in Monterey, California. And there are so many activities going on at this thing, it's almost impossible for me to tell you about them all. But suffice it to say that there are activities for every cyclist in your family, including a bike festival and expo, and it's a fantastic event. But let me just tell you about some of the things that are going on. As far as road riders, there's circuit races, there's road races, there's recreational tours of 20, 40, and 100 miles. There's mountain bike races, cross country, short track, pro and elite stage race, gravity mountain biking, downhill, dual slalom, and there's even more. Plus, for the kids, and for the kids and all of us, SRAM has something that they call the Mountain Bike Ride Zone. And the Mountain Bike Ride Zone is what they're calling a rider's playground. And this is where you can go with your mountain bike, you can play around on jumps and other obstacles, you can learn tricks, And what's really neat is that there's going to be pros on hand to teach your kids tricks that they've always wanted to learn. And they're even going to be setting up ladders, rails, teeter-totters, and berms for the more experienced riders. Now, in addition to all of this, there's also going to be some recreational mountain bike tours. So there's just a lot going on. If you're anywhere near Central or Northern California this weekend, definitely head on down there. Check it out. I put links in the show notes to their website. It's www.seaotterclassic.com. It's a fantastic event. Everybody always enjoys that event. I think that you will too. So go check it out. If you go up there and you enjoy it, please let me know. Now, recently here in Los Angeles, we had the Los Angeles Marathon. And in conjunction with the Los Angeles Marathon, there's a ride called the LA Marathon Bike Tour. And it takes place early in the morning before the runners get started. And they close off all the streets, and cyclists are able to ride the 26.2-mile course on closed streets in a very safe environment, and it's a lot of fun. I did it the very first year that they offered it. We all got rained on. There were probably 20,000 of us or something, but we had an amazing time, and it was a really great event. And that led me to thinking about what other great urban bike rides there are out there that you might want to consider. And so I made a list of just a very few of them that you might want to consider around the country that are just apparently a lot of fun and a great way to see some of the great cities of North America. So the first one I wanted to mention is what's called the Five Borough Bike Tour. And this one takes place May the 7th. And by the way, for all these bike tours I'm going to talk about, there are links in the show notes so you can check it out. This is going to be the 29th annual Five Borough Bike Tour, and they call it the largest recreational cycling event in the United States. What's really great about this is it goes through all the five boroughs of New York City. It's 42 miles, and it's a complete traffic-free ride through the streets, highways, and bridges of New York City. That sounds like a lot of fun. I would love to do that one some year, and if you're doing it, let us know. The next one takes place on May the 28th, and it's called Bike the Drive. And this one takes place on Lakeshore Drive in Chicago. And it's just another great way on closed roads to be able to see one of the great cities of North America. And that's at www.bikethedrive.org. And the next one, and this is not just a ride, but it's also a festival. This is the Montreal Bike Fest and the Tour de l'Île de Montréal. This one takes place May the 28th to June the 4th. Links are also in the show notes. Another great way to see yet another great city in North America. So just a couple of ways that you can see some cities by bike on closed roads in a very safe environment. And this is a great one, not just for us Freds, but these are good also to bring your families. You can bring the kids. If you've got little ones, you can bring them in the trailer or on their ride along. Or if they're a little bit bigger, they can even ride their own bikes. These are not races. These are not competitions. They're just fun, family-friendly ways to see some great cities. So go ahead and check them out. All right, that's going to do it, other than just a couple of notes and shout-outs, and I do want to give a couple of shout-outs this week. The first one is to Justin. Justin emailed me from Ogden, Utah, and he knows that I'm looking at doing a century a month and at least one double this year, and he recommended a double to me, the Latoha Classic, and the Latoha Classic goes from Logan, Utah, on up to Jackson, Wyoming. And it takes place in the late summer, early fall. And Justin, this is what I'm thinking about doing. So it'd be fun to ride with you up there. And thank you for telling me about that. Next shout out goes to Mike from the Fremont Freewheelers Bicycle Club. And I want to thank Mike because he was kind enough to send an email to nearly 250 members of his club about the Fredcast. And I definitely saw a bump in subscriptions as a result. So Mike, thank you very much. Next, shout out to Christy in Asheville, North Carolina, and she was listening to my podcast a few Fredcasts ago about riding in Hawaii, and she wanted to know if I had any experience cycling in Oahu. And actually, no, I have not done any cycling in Oahu, mainly because there's way too much traffic there, and one of the reasons I go on vacation is to get away from the traffic here in LA. So all the cycling I've done in the state of Hawaii has either been on the Big Island of Hawaii or on Maui. A couple of other shout outs. Wanted to say hi to Dan in Southern Illinois. And Dan, I mean, definitely guaranteed a shout out. His email was very, very simple. It said, "Wow, what a great podcast." And that's a sure way to get a shout out. A couple of other shout outs. Hi to Kurt in Illinois, David in Oaxaca, Mexico, Helen from New Zealand. And that's probably going to do it for tonight. Before we go, just a couple of things. As always, thank you so much for voting for the Fredcast at Podcast Alley. Your votes put the Fredcast in March of 2006 in the number 80 spot. That's 80 out of about 17,000 podcasts listed on Podcast Alley. So thank you very much for that. Keep spreading the word. Tell your friends about the Fredcast. The Fredcast forums should be up by the next time you hear the Fredcast. I've gotten a lot of great suggestions from you about forum topics, and so it should be real simple to put those in, and you'll be able to go on there, interact with me, and interact with each other, because as some of you know, I sometimes get a little bit behind on my email, and so having those forums up there will just be another way to interact with other Freds, and hopefully they'll respond a little bit faster than sometimes I do. Go ahead and make sure that you're listed on our Frapper map, and if you like, you can send me an email or an audio comment to thefredcast@gmail.com. That's our email address. You can send a voicemail to the Fredcast listener hotline at 206-203-FRED. Or as always, please continue to visit the website at www.thefredcast.com. After the PodSafe cycling music tonight, please stay tuned because I do have a promo from Pedal Radio that I'd like to play for you. So look for that after the PodSafe cycling music. Our cycling music tonight is called Ride, and it's by a band called the Velmas. And as always, the music comes to us from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Links in the show notes to the Pod Show site, as well as to the Velmas website. So that's going to do it for episode 12 of the Fredcast. I'm David. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Palm of my hand, two things I can easily control. But ask me how I feel about forever, and I'll tell you my thoughts on how I own the weather. Did you ever think of the day you'd be where the yellow sun shines its brightest glow? Did you ever think of the day you'd be where the two of us can live out the show? I'll take you for a ride, take you out to anywhere that you wanna go. I'll take you for a ride, as long as I can be there when you first see the snow. Future's lawn, there are no properties. It opens up to whomever owns you and me. Believe in destiny. Why take a chance on just one last roll? There are so many places that we can start. How about a trip to the stars or a date out on Mars? Let's view the world through the eyes that we see it and carve our vision straight into stone. I'll take you for a ride. I'll take you out to anywhere that you wanna go. I'll take you for a ride, as long as I can be there when you first see the snow. Go! Take your time, as long as
This is Big Stick Rick from Pedal Radio, music you can pedal to. Have you ever been riding your bike on a quiet road and wish you had some original music to listen to? Or maybe you're putting in the miles, getting ready for that next race, and wish you had a good stretch of tunes with the same tempo you pedal at. Or if you're like me, you need to get your wide bum back on the bike and need a little motivation. Come check me out at pedalradio.com. I'll play an hour of pod-safe music every week. Music from all genres with tempos you can keep time to while you ride. No breaks, little talk, just good riding music. So whether you ride a bent, wedgie, or boing boing, come enjoy the ride at Pedal Radio, music you can pedal to.